Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Let's head to the phone lines right now and be joined by our guy, Josh Vernier, to talk about the hottest team in baseball. Vern, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing very well. It's always fun when they're winning, when the weather's nice, and they both are true today. So feeling really good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, Vern. What is the biggest difference in this team now than 3 weeks ago?
Offense, you have to point to the offense, right? Vinny's hitting 343 over the, since the calendar flipped to May. We see Jonathan India with an on-base percentage near 400 since the calendar flipped to May. Now, I could go back to Drew Waters and Michael Garcia coming alongside Bobby Witt Jr. That's really when the offense started to have something, bring something to the table. That happened during that Detroit series, and since then they've won 15 of 17. The pitching was great. It's been obscene of lately, 6 shutouts in the last 13 games. Defense has tightened up. The base running's got a little cleaner. Bullpens remain stout, but if I had to pick one, I would say the offense and the bats that we talked about for the first month of the season. C-Dot, Jonathan India, Bobby, Salvi, and Vinny Pasquantino. Bobby's been a stud. Salvi's no longer unlucky. He's running into a double basically every single night. And then I mentioned what India and Vinny are doing. So it's those top 4 bats. And now with Garcia, Waters, and a solid contribution from Freddie Fermin and Kyle Isbell, you feel pretty good showing up to the ballpark for an offense that's averaging more than 5 runs a game since the calendar flipped to May.
I was just going to say that. Let's talk a little bit more about Michael Garcia. I think his value was, while this offense was still trying to figure things out, he was a constant for this team in those first 15 to 25 games or so that allowed Salvi to turn things around, that allowed Vinny to turn things around. It feels like last year he took a little bit of a dip, and that's going to be certain highs and lows when it comes to a young player. But this is the season that a lot of people expected Michael Garcia to have last year. He has had a phenomenal start to this season.
Yeah, without question. Last time I checked, there were only 2 hitters in the big leagues with a better batting average and a higher slugging percentage than Michael Garcia, and it's Pete Alonso and Aaron Judge. Throw on top of that the guy can play shortstop on an everyday basis at the big league level. Last year, he was one of the top 5 base runners in the sports. I still think he's one of the top 20 defensive infielders in the sport. He's hitting for average. He's showing enough extra base power, and we know he has a really good arm. You talk about that step back that he took last season. I think most of that just was maturation, a lack thereof. A 24-year-old that needed to grow up. Now, I didn't grow up, in my opinion, until I was like 31, maybe 32. So I have grace for a guy like Michael Garcia. But to see him make this leap, keep in mind, he's only 3 months older than Bobby Witt Jr. He right now looks like a guy that you're going to have to pay $100 million plus to when his time comes if you don't beat him to the punch. Honestly, he looks like the guy that would have made Jonathan India stay in Cincinnati, right? Maybe you still trade Brady Singer, but if this Michael Garcia was present last year, you're not trading Brady Singer for Jonathan India. You're trading him for something else, but certainly not a leadoff hitter, because Michael looks every bit of a leadoff hitter, of a 2 hitter. He's just a terrific 5-tool talent.
I was just going to ask you, do you see a scenario in which the Royals shake up the lineup?
No, not until it's dire with India, and like I mentioned, he's picked it up of late. No, because of what I talked about, the same reason why I'm not expecting Carlos Estevez to leave the closer's role anytime soon. It's still a business. You made a business move in parting with Brady Singer to bring in Jonathan India, and the people that made that decision are going to give a long leash to Jonathan India in that leadoff spot, because that's what you brought him here to do. It's certainly not to play defense. It's to hit leadoff and get on base. You brought Carlos Estevez here and gave him more than $20 million to be your closer to get those final three outs. And he's doing a pretty good job of it. I know Lucas Erceg looks like Wade Davis right now, but Wade Davis pitched in the eighth inning in 2014 when he was arguably the greatest reliever since Mariano Rivera. So I don't see any need to shuffle up really much with this team.
Right now, we're talking to Josh Vernier. You're talking about the Royals, who are the hottest team in baseball. Let's talk about the pitching here. This team right now, I don't think we've ever been able to say this, Vern. They might have too much starting pitching. Like, most teams keep up Noah Cameron after the start, at least give him another one. Like,
yeah.
And there wasn't really room for him to be here. I think if you were talking top to bottom, this might be the most complete, from starting pitching to bullpen, this might be the most complete pitching staff that I've ever seen them build.
Yeah, you think of the second half of 2015, on paper, Cueto, Volquez, Yordano was a pretty strong 1-2-3 led by a true ace in Cueto, but I think Reagans is now, or at least should now, be viewed as one of those true aces. Chris Bubich is knocking on the door. You dive into whatever metric you want to dive into. It says he's one of the 20 best pitchers in Major League Baseball, and he's your number four. The reigning runner-up for the American League Cy Young and Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, who, according to the metrics, is one of the 15 best pitchers right now in Major League Baseball. Yeah, Noah Cameron. Tough news today with Kyle Wright, as some shoulder fatigue is going to force the team to skip his next few starts as he tries to recover from a litany of injuries that have had him out of the big league since 2023. But still, to have a guy, to your point, to have a guy like Noah Cameron, who takes a no-no into the seventh inning in his big league debut, to have that guy throwing BBs down in Omaha because there's not a spot for him in the rotation in the big leagues is a terrific problem to have. And if he continues to dominate, maybe Lorenzen goes to the bullpen and Cameron makes his way back to the big leagues, or maybe in the second half of the season, like we saw with Daniel Lynch, maybe Cameron finds his way into the bullpen. I think the former is more likely. I think him entering the rotation and Lorenzen going to the bullpen is more likely, but to have those type of options, to your point, is remarkable.
Or possibly, Vern, the Royals have ammunition to go get an outfielder for this team.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Not only those names I just mentioned, and boy, would Kyle Wright be nice, a 29-year-old that's already won 20 games in a season at the big league level, but the Royals have some interesting pieces at the lower levels of the minor leagues as well. And listen, you know, Aroldis Chapman's in town with the Boston Red Sox right now, and I don't think any Royals fan can view him without thinking of Cole Reagans. There's no reason to believe that this organization will be anything but aggressive going into the July 31st trade deadline. So, yeah, whatever it is that ails this team, you know, last year it was the bullpen. You bring in Lucas Erceg and Hunter Harvey, you throw Daniel Lynch out there, and you felt really good about your bullpen down the stretch. If we're still lamenting this right field, one of the corner outfield spots, right? I think it's only down to one. I think we're happy with Drew Waters playing 5 out of 7 games. But yeah, if you're looking for that thump, that true number five hitter, that Kendrys Morales type for this team, yeah. I have no reason to believe that this organization won't part with something that they prize to go further than they did last season, to win the whole damn thing.
Vern, which one happens first? Is it Cags comes up or MJ comes back?
Boy, good question. Well, I don't see either happening before the All-Star break, so I'll say, boy, that's a really good question, because injury could have MJ here sooner, but even with injury, I don't believe that happens before the All-Star game. You need to get him right top to bottom. But an injury right after the All-Star break in early August, in a pinch, MJ could find himself up here for a week. I don't see the team taking a mega nosedive to the point where you're saying, all right, Cags is now out of the question because we don't want him viewed as a savior. We want him to join this team as a weapon, someone that we can bring into the lineup in the 7th spot and the 8th spot and let him earn his way up the lineup. Boy, good question. I guess I'll say MJ. I want to say Cags just to get the people going, but an injury and a 3-day stint in the big leagues for MJ, because he's already on the 40-man roster, I got to go with the odds, and the odds say that's the correct answer.
All right, I'll get you out of here with this last question. This is not me knocking Royals fans for attendance, but I'm trying to think of how many cities in America wouldn't have 30,000 people out there today. Like, you factor in everything. The Royals are the hottest team in baseball. The weather is perfect. The Red Sox are in town. It's a Friday with fireworks. Most cities in America go out to support their team. That I am kind of looking at this as, I'm really curious to see how bought in Royals fans are with this team. You know, back in 2015, I understand the circumstances were different. I mean, they would have had 33,000 people out there tonight to watch this regular season game, and we wouldn't have been talking about graduation or where the stadium is or any of those things. I'm really intrigued to see how bought in Kansas City is with how this early Royals season is going.
Yeah, I'm just trying to pull it up right now, looking at that 2015 team, because even in 2015, they didn't draw 3 million fans, which is still mind-blowing to me, just because I was in Milwaukee during their resurgence in the middle aughts, and middle teens, who cares? But I was there, and they turned up in droves, right? They hit 3 million in Milwaukee. They've certainly done it in Detroit when I was there. Now, the thing is that I keep coming back to is, you know, Royals fans, and you made mention of it earlier, you know, they watch, they listen, and that's because Royals Nation is pretty spread out, right? Throughout Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, down to Arkansas, not always a driving distance away from Kauffman Stadium, but to your point, yeah, 30,000 tonight, no, you're not going to get that in Tampa because their ballpark doesn't hold it. Miami, because they don't trust big league baseball down there for good reason. Sacramento wouldn't. Maybe the Angels, you know, but outside of that, man, yeah, it certainly wouldn't be a good look. Yeah, I'm looking at 2015 right now, Friday at home, the Yankees, May 15th, had 34,500. So, yeah, I think it's a fair request that the Royals hit 30,000 tonight, but, you know, we've been here too long, man. I'm not holding my breath.
And that is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. You can hear him coming up in about 2 hours or so as he gets you ready for, hopefully, another Royals win. And, right. Vern, I need a win today in betting. You've asked me to do it a couple
times.
Come
on, man.
I haven't won yet.
Rob
I feel
got
like
a
I
win
got a
this
good
week.
One.
Pick it up.